Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands. Jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubiconglobal.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. Today, I am joined by Jonathan Webb. He's the founder of App Harvest. It's a very cool company. They're bridging the gap between one of the oldest industries and some cutting-edge tech, but I'll let him talk more about that. Jonathan, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Amy. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, let's just get right to it. Tell me a bit about you and how you got your start, you know, your personal and professional timeline a bit. How did you come up with this idea?
Well, Amy, I grew up in Kentucky and place is very important to me, and ended up graduating from the University of Kentucky around 2008. So we all remember the global financial crisis. And at one point, had the opportunity to pursue a career and potentially coal sales over in Eastern Kentucky, and did not do that, and ended up moving to New York and pursued a career in solar development. And since that time, between 2008 and a couple years ago, before founding App Harvest, I was a part of developing some of the largest solar projects in the southeast of the U.S. Was supporting a White House initiative under the last administration where we were building large-scale renewable projects on Army land. And was a part of building the solar projects down in Georgia at Fort Benning, Stewart, and Gordon. And just seeing the uptick of one industry, the wind and solar industry, that had taken off across this country over the past decade, while also seeing the decline of coal in the eastern part of the state of Kentucky, it was, for me, important to try to find a way to build large-scale sustainable projects in the eastern part of our state. And moving over from large-scale energy development to large-scale agriculture, indoor agriculture specifically in this case with App Harvest, that really being back in Kentucky has been refreshing. And again, trying to bridge the divide of all the capital and the brilliant and bright minds that we've seen go to work in the sustainable industry and try to get some of those folks over into Central Appalachia, Eastern Kentucky. And hopefully this project is the start of that.
So now let's break down, you know, the App Harvest business model a bit. How exactly is this going to work?
Right. Well, I've tried to say, so the country of the Netherlands is one third the size of Kentucky in landmass. We could fit the entire country of the Netherlands into eastern Kentucky, yet the country has the second most agricultural exports in the world, only behind the U.S. They're growing with incredible efficiency, getting very high yield and very little inputs. And so when I was in D.C. and working on the energy projects, I started to really unpack who is doing agriculture right around the world. And when I started researching agriculture, I kept getting led back to the Netherlands. And at this point, you know, my take on tech is, you know, we have great researchers and scientists all around the world and labs and in San Francisco and in, you know, Boston, trying to come up with the next big breakthrough. And from my perspective, it's about execution at scale. We have a lot of the right answers out there in the world. We all know our planet is in peril by any number of metric or any way you look at it. And for me at App Harvest, it was about taking proven technologies and deploying at scale. And so for us, we're taking the ecosystem that we see in the Netherlands, where they are the clear world leader in agriculture, and bringing those technologies over to our region in eastern Kentucky
So speaking of, you know, your region, Eastern Kentucky, did you consider any other location for, you know, the first facility, or did you always know that Kentucky should be home? I mean, you don't really associate agriculture with maybe that part of the country.
Right. No, for me, we are focused on building the largest indoor produce hub, sustainable produce hub in America, and we're going to do it in Eastern Kentucky. So that's been the laser focus. But why Kentucky beyond just the fact that I love the state that I'm from? Jeff Bezos was in Kentucky about a month ago with our governor, where they announced the $1.5 billion Amazon Prime facility. UPS has their world port in Louisville, Kentucky. We can get to about 70% of the U.S. in a one-day drive. So geographic location is a critical part of why Kentucky. And then also where we see with agriculture west of Colorado, it's drying up. The Colorado River's drying up. Arizona, California, drought-stricken. South of our border, this is where we grow most of our produce. The water is running out. Whereas in Kentucky, we had the record amount of rainfall for our state last year, and we're on track to have them break that record this year with the most amount of rain. So why Kentucky? Great place to build a large indoor produce hub, retool our food system in America, get to 70% of the U.S. in a day drive, and be in a very water-rich region where water is going to be a scarce resource in decades to come.
So what has the response been, you know, in the surrounding community? Are people just pumped to have y'all in Moorhead?
Yes. It's been very, very rewarding. And I would say to any entrepreneur or innovator or tech founder that might be listening to this that's in Boston or New York or San Francisco, I've encouraged folks, you know, through the process, I was able to speak at Georgetown Law School and encouraged folks, you know, to go back to their communities, go back to their states or wherever they're from and try to work to solve problems there. And not just from a passion project play, but from it's the right thing to do from an ROI standpoint. I mean, the community and the state that have rallied around what we're doing, the ROI on our investment to be able to make this possible, this is absolutely not possible without the community support and state support that we've received. And I do think for those folks that are looking to start a business and innovate, go back to your communities that'll rally around you. I mean, meet with your community leaders or mayor, meet with your congressman and see how you can build the business at home where you came from. And for me, doing it in Kentucky has been a wonderful thing personally, but also just the right business decision.
So sustainable farming can boast some really awesome numbers when it comes to, you know, the reduction in water consumption, and that much I know, and I think a lot of people can infer from that. But what are some other maybe not so well-known benefits of farming and feeding this way? What are we, you know, going to see in the future?
Well, Amy, we've got to think long and hard and about agriculture. Everybody talks about energy and our energy needs. I mean, the basic pillars of civilization, energy, agriculture, we're not talking about master planning or policy around agriculture globally the way we should. By 2050, with a population that'll reach nearly 10 billion, we will need 50 to 70% more food than what we currently produce today. Many people say we would need two planet Earths with enough land and water in order to grow that food. Right now, the world's using 70% of its fresh water for agriculture production. Well, we don't have 140% of fresh water. We have 100, and we're already approaching that. So with indoor and controlled environment agriculture, with us, we're able to use 90% less water than open field agriculture. Don't use the harsh chemical pesticides. We'll use integrated pest management, and we can get a tremendous amount more yield per acre, depending on the crop or system we're growing in. So it's simply a must do around the world. And I'm hopeful that policymakers, not only in our country, but around the globe, start to look to the Netherlands and what they have done to build the most efficient agriculture economy in the world. And I hope the other nations around the world begin to figure this out, because to me, it's not about the IP. It's not about, you know, one company trying to hold on to the right answers. Again, our planet has real big problems, and together we have got to move rapidly to retool and deploy systems at scale and execute So for me, it's not about holding on to some IP where we've got the best idea in the world. It's about simply taking those best ideas in the world and working together and deploying at scale. So agriculture is something that we collectively need to focus on. And I am hopeful that food is becoming more of a topic and an ongoing conversation, but it's something we need to really be focusing on. And I don't see it even in the presidential debates or in DC. I'm in DC right now, and I just don't feel like the conversation is elevated high enough to really, for the general public and all of us, to be thinking through what are the food systems of the future that are going to feed our communities.
Well, I think that's the perfect phrase for it, a food system for the future. I mean, it's 60 acres, right? It's 60 acres under glass.
Yes. So this facility will be one of the, if not the largest indoor connected grow facility. It'll be over 2.7 million acres of grow area. And then for us, why the glass facility? Of course, there's other indoor ag companies in San Francisco and Brooklyn that have gotten a lot of attention. They're growing in warehouses or fully indoors. And for us, we looked at it agnostically, going, how do we do this and use technology to best align with nature? And for us, the glass facility made the most sense because we get two free inputs that our planet gives us, and that's sunlight and rainwater. And if you're growing in those indoor warehouses, you're not able to capture the sunlight. And for us, we really wanted to utilize those inputs. So the glass facility allows us to layer on the technology on the inside, the software, the sensors to drive efficiency, but we can still capture the sunlight and have the artificial lighting on top of that. Then additionally, on top of that, the way we have designed this system, it'll be one of the, if not the only system to run completely on recycled rainwater. So that 60-acre facility will collect the rainwater on top, and it will put it in a retention pond where we then circulate the rainwater back into the grow facility. That is critical for a couple of reasons. One, we have aging infrastructure around our country and all around the world, where we've seen what's happened in Flint, Michigan, and other communities that have had aging water infrastructure. For us to be able to island our facility and run completely on rainwater makes us very resilient and doesn't put a press on local water systems. Beyond that, water that comes from the ground or comes from water treatment plants has sodium in it. That's important because when the water runs through the hydroponic system, the sodium builds up. You have to flush water through the system to get the sodium out, which you flush down a wastewater system where you get agricultural runoff. Because we're running this system completely on recycled rainwater, rainwater has no sodium. As a result, we can have a closed loop system. We're not putting any wastewater or will not have any agricultural runoff from this facility. So from our standpoint, we tried to take technologies in a layer on top of the natural systems that our planet provides us. And this is one step in the right direction of what we feel like agriculture in America can look like.
That is just, it's so brilliant. And it's so nuts. What are you guys going to grow in there? Any specialty crops?
Yeah, so we'll focus on specialty crops. With this type of system, you could grow tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers. You could alter it a bit and grow berries or leafy greens or herbs. But for us, we're going to focus on tomatoes and then additionally some cucumbers. But why tomatoes? And it, not getting into any geopolitical or trade conversation, simply from a environmental perspective, the average American meal is traveling 1,500 miles by the time it gets to our plates. Produce imports from south of our border have nearly tripled in the last 10 to 15 years. There were nearly 4 billion pounds of tomatoes that were imported from Mexico alone last year. So where those tomatoes are being trucked 5 days on a semi-truck to get to the eastern seaboard, that just doesn't make any sense from an environmental standpoint. So for us, we want to focus on tomatoes, grow in our region, be able to get to 70% of the U.S. population on a one-day drive. That'll reduce our diesel consumption and transportation by 80 to 90% less diesel. So why tomatoes? Just so we can try to bring some of that production home and get our diesel consumption down 80 to 90% on the transportation. But then from there, we'll move out to many other varieties as we continue to build in the eastern part of our state.
Our show is geared towards a younger generation of people. You know, we want to be conscious consumers and we want to ultimately leave the planet a little bit better than when we first got here. And that includes millennials and that includes Gen Z. And so throughout some of my research, I saw that App Harvest has put a big emphasis on, you know, not only production and agriculture, but the education of the system. So what are some of the things that you guys are doing to engage the next generation of decision makers?
Well, Amy, thanks for bringing that up. A lot of people focus on the size and scope of the project that we're first building. But as I've tried to say, you know, App Harvest is not going to be defined by steel and glass or some structure or facility. We will be defined by the people of our region, and together we'll work to redefine agriculture in America. But yeah, this has been, I'm fortunate enough that our investors really bought onto the vision. And we are a benefit corporation, a registered benefit corporation, which has allowed us to really look long term. I try to say this is not just about doing passionately what feels right, but also what just is right for the business. And for us, we look at that ecosystem in Holland. And for us, it's we want to develop this culture and mindset of what agriculture can be. You don't go around and talk to a high school student. You don't hear anybody that says, I want to be a farmer. You hear, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. Maybe I want to be an athlete or move to LA to go get into acting. You don't hear anybody say, I want to be a farmer. And the reality is the average age of the farmer in America is in their 60s. And we've got to find a way to recalibrate and rethink through what farming is. So for us, I met Kimball Musk throughout this process. I spent a couple of hours with him at a Walton family function down in Bentonville, Arkansas, where Walmart is. And he was telling me about his company, Square Roots, in Brooklyn, where Square Roots has containers in Brooklyn where they're growing indoors. They're shipping containers, like a semi-truck that they've converted indoors. So I went up, I met the CEO, and I looked at some of the containers. Brilliant idea. And again, I think agriculture is going to be redefined in many different ways. And what they're doing is an amazing effort. And we thought, you know, we're building the large scale grow facilities, but what better way to engage the youth in our region? And so when I went up there and saw it, I remember it was a Sunday morning. I'd gotten back to Kentucky and I called the principal at Shelby Valley High School. And I said, hey, Greg, we're going to order a shipping container. Can we put it at your high school? And within a matter of days, we had already ordered. Frankly, before I called Greg, we had already ordered the container. I was just hoping he'd say yes. We move really fast. So Greg rallied, you know, the Shelby Valley High School in Pike County, Kentucky, really rallied around this. We put the shipping container at the high school. We had nearly 80 or 90 students that applied to get into a program that we set up. We could only take 30. We had kids come in at 6:30 in the morning, an hour before school, to take over this container. They brought it to life. We offered, you know, some of the classes to stand up the facility, but they really just brought it to life. And what we're trying to do is just create a culture of growing. We've lost that. And in high schools and middle schools and elementary schools around the country, we're not growing food. We're not talking about food. We're not talking about where our food comes from. And I do think, you know, some of the ag tech leaders in America are going to come from Shelby Valley High School in Pike County, Kentucky. Whether they end up working with App Harvest or they come up with their own ideas for how we're going to recreate farming in America, I'm confident that some of those students that have been working with us will be some of those young leaders. And for us, it's really critical, going back to what I said with, you know, App Harvest will not be defined by steel and glass structures. In the long run, when we look back in 5 or 10 years, it's going to be the people of our region that have dug in with us, evaluated technologies, see how we can best farm. It'll be us working together, and it'll ultimately be people defining what App Harvest is or what the future of agriculture looks like in our region.
I think that's absolutely right, and you hit the nail on the head. You know, I've seen you on 60 Minutes, and I watched, you know, the Squawk Box videos and the TED Talks and read everything on Twitter. And, you know, the scale and the scope of the project is huge, but like you were saying, it's really the impact of the project that matters. So before I let you off the hook, I did want to play a little game. I'm going to shoot off a couple rapid fire questions and you just say the first thing that comes to your mind. You ready?
Go for it, Amy.
Number one, what does your morning routine look like?
I drink a lot of water.
Number two, what was your first job?
I mowed lawns when I was growing up.
Who is the last person that you texted?
That was our good friend Scott at our company who's working to always try to keep me on track. So good shout out to Scott Sloan.
What does an ideal Saturday look like for you?
A nice early walk in the morning with ideally a nice good sunrise.
If any actor, dead or alive, could play you in the movie of your life, who would you cast as yourself?
Oh gosh, Amy, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Johnny Depp and George Clooney are from Kentucky, so I think I'd take either one of them.
Yeah, those aren't bad options. What did you want to be when you grew up? You were talking about how kids don't want to be farmers. What did you want to be?
You know, Amy, for me, my biggest inspiration growing up was my father, who's an entrepreneur and had a small business. And I knew I was going to form something of my own. I did not know it was going to be farming, and I did not know it was going to be a project of this scale. But always knew I was going to start a small business, and knew that from early on.
Well, that's weird that you're like reading my mind, because my next question is, what is one small piece of advice you have for a budding entrepreneur?
Find someone with integrity that you really look up to, because you know a lot of things come and go in this world, but integrity doesn't. And it takes a lifetime to build your character, and it takes a very short time for that to deteriorate. So I think for entrepreneurs, and I'm not sure that it's talked about enough, you know, people talk about the business side or the economics or, you know, how to raise money. But I think integrity and character, especially in this day when purpose is so important to a business, you know, finding good role models that have integrity and character should be critical to any entrepreneur.
We talked a bit about tomatoes and cukes, but what's your favorite fruit and what's your favorite veggie?
Oh, gosh. Well, I do love tomatoes. You know, I can eat a tomato like a peach. Just grab a nice, big, plump, red tomato, chew right into it. And then fruit. I do like peaches, raspberries, but I love plants. You can't eat enough good, healthy, fresh fruits and vegetables. So I love all varieties of fruits and veggies.
And lastly, what does success mean to you?
Well, Amy, I think, again, we're in a world where there's a lot of problems. And for me, I think success should be defined by impact at scale. And businesses without purpose really don't serve our society at this point. We need folks who are striving, and success being defined by impact would be a great benchmark. So for me, impact at scale would be the way in which I would define success.
I love that. And I love what y'all are doing. You know, we're excited about the future and just really pumped to watch, you know, no pun intended, to watch AppHarvest grow. Jonathan, thank you so much for spending your Monday morning with me.
Well, Amy, thank you for having me. And this is an incredible podcast. I've gotten to know Nate Morris, a founder and CEO at Rubicon Global, very well. And, you know, I think it's also important for people to look at businesses that are a little messy, and the way that Rubicon has gone into the trash business to revolutionize the way in which the trash industry is run in the United States is important. And I've tried to learn a lot from the company that was built there. And this podcast is important, and appreciate the time you all have given to me to discuss our efforts here at AppHarvest.
Oh, I promise y'all, I did not pay him to say that. Jonathan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Amy.